going to kind of take you through my five steps of coming through a deposition and break those down. And we'll start with the initial planning step. You get to decide all the big questions, right? Who, what, when, where, why. We'll start with why. One of my first bosses said, you take a deposition for two reasons. One is to nail down admissions. That's kind of the fun part, right? You know, prove the points that you're trying to prove. And the other is to nail down the story. So you want to hear all the bad that this person might say about your client, about your case, about your facts, and then be able to break that down, like, how do you know that? Or where did you get that opinion? So that at trial, you're not hearing that for the first time. In complex cases, there are lots of other reasons why you might take depositions other than the big two. You might want to give voice to that critical document, have someone have to say those words out loud. You might want to educate yourself. Oftentimes, businesses use, or maybe your client's competitor uses acronyms, code words, special vocabulary. You all have clients who do this, or if you have a spouse who's in the tech business, my husband represents Applied Materials a lot, and there are so many acronyms. He talks in them, and I have to get him to go backwards and tell me the story again. And sometimes I don't ask him to repeat it, but sometimes I do. But so to try to figure out those acronyms and the vocab and the code words, and also how these people communicate with one another. Because, you know, if you're as old as Quentin, for instance, then you might have had memos to the file that used to cross-examine people on. But today, that moved to emails and texts, and it's even moved far past that. Have you all discovered on Slack? A lot of people in the tech world or even in just general business world are communicating through Slack, their Salesforce, Confluence, what they're doing is they're iterating on these, on the process, their business process, and you never know. You might find your client's trade secrets baked right in there. Or on the flip side, you might want to check that out before and ask for an early mediation if you check into your client's Confluence or Slack and see some troubling information that seeped in to the process. Some people take Rule 202 depositions. How many of you all have ever done that? The early deposition before trial, or before the case is filed, and I see several hands going up. I think, and I see like six hands going up, and I'll tell you, I've done it once. It's a very rare process, and the rules for it, I'm sure Paul can tell us more about this, but the rules for it have been really battened down. But if you're in a business litigation, you're often both the plaintiff and the defendant. You can almost always find some reason that the other side needs to be sued, or the declaratory judgment action provides you an avenue to have the contract interpreted. So if you notice up a Rule 202 deposition prior to litigation in Travis County, you might find your client sued in New York the next day, right, in a real lawsuit. And so you have to be really mindful of what an early attack like that, that's not a total attack that creates venue over the case, might do to your case in general if you don't have a venue or jurisdiction clause. And really, the main reason I could see for taking a 202 deposition today is if you have a heightened pleading standard. Now that anti-SLAPP has sort of loosened up, you don't have to worry about that as much. There's case law on subpoenas duces tecum with regard to 202 depositions, whether you can get documents with those. And that is summarized in a Jackson Walker paper that's referenced at footnote 2 in my checklist. So now you're going to want to decide who to depose, right? You got this big org chart in a company, and there are wildly differing opinions on where you should start. Your client might pick the person they dislike the most. They just want you to get after somebody, right? My colleague, my good friend and friend in Houston, Chris Reynolds, who is referenced in the paper, he likes to start at the very top. And if you know Chris, he already knows all of the documents. He already knows everything about the case when he walks in, and that CEO is fresh, and he likes to attack from there. For me, I need a little more warm-up. I often like to start at the bottom, get that vocab, hear from someone who doesn't feel attacked, try to get the feel of the story from the corporate side, from someone who is looser and easier to talk to, and then use that to get more documents, move to compel, whatnot, and then go for the top at the towards the end. Now, if you go for the tip top, you might be in an apex deposition, and that means you're going to, for instance, you notice the CEO of Walmart, and your case may involve, the CEO may have had something to do with that case. But if you seek an apex deposition and the corporate official or corporation files a motion for protective order and an affidavit that says, denies that they have knowledge of relevant facts, you have to prove two things. You have to prove that this person has unique information, not that they share information with someone else, and two, that you've already tried all less intrusive manners to get to this person. So this is a battle that you may want to save for later in your case so that you can prove that you've taken less intrusive, you've tried less intrusive methods.